Welcome to the Parkscope Unprofessional Podcast Hour. We have a very special episode tonight. Joining me is Danny from Touring Plans. Danny, how are you doing?
I am magical.
That's amazing. That sounds great. So you're at Bahama Breeze tonight.
I was. They're celebrating National Margarita Day, which is on Wednesday, and they had a bunch of us out to try out a couple different things, so I'm full and happy.
Nice. That sounds really good. I saw there's a local taco place that's doing a bunch of stuff for National Margarita Day that I probably have to go and do now, because that sounds amazing. Also joining us is Ben from the Disney Photography Blog. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. It's been a lovely kind of high 60s in Cleveland, Ohio this week. It's kind of weird. I don't know how I feel. But in normal Ohio tradition, it's going to be in the 60s to like Friday, and then it's going to snow on Sunday. So there you go. Anyway, we're going to start off. Yeah. It's Ohio. It's kind of bipolar weather. It's real, really, really crazy. What the craziest thing, though, is I was talking to my buddy last night in Phoenix, and it's warmer in Chicago and Cleveland than it was in Phoenix. So I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, let's start off real quick. Universal, actually, we're going to start off with two Universal bits of news. Universal released some new ads. They've been kind of doing this for a while now, but they released their latest one, which is a national ad with Hollywood in Orlando. This one's interesting because it really kind of targets Disney in a weird way, where, like, they're really going for that whole entire Disney's for everyone up to, like, 8 years old. And then you can go to Universal for the rest of their life, in a way. The big kind of, like, I think the knife stab kind of thing with Universal was they showed a little girl looking at herself in a princess dress. And, like, her, like, 5 years later in robes standing outside of a Hogwarts. And, like, talking about how, like, I've grown up and, like, you know, now it's time for a real vacation or whatever. So that was just really interesting. And they also did one with a boy, like, it was like an online ad where it was talking about a boy who had a hard time communicating and relating to people, and Harry Potter helped, and they went to Diagon Alley. And then they did another one with a bunch of adults saying, you know, hey, now it's time for an adult vacation, and they showed Cabana Bay and stuff. So yeah, Ben, what are your thoughts on the ads?
Well, it seems that they're really trying to hit, as you mentioned, the older demographic. They've realized that there's always going to be people who are going to be going to Disney, and those are going to be those people with the young kids who want the memories of Disney and Mickey and Minnie and the first time their kids see a princess in front of the castle. And it seems they're just going, we've lost that. We're never going to get that. So why don't we go for this mid-level, the kids who may look at a Disney vacation and say, that's boring. I don't want to deal with dark rides and spin rides. I want to go on roller coasters. I want to see fire and explosions. And Disney is not giving as much of that as they used to. It used to be Hollywood Studios that way, but they've shut down half of it. And so,
yeah. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting take on it. And it's much better than the old Universal ads, which are just atrociously bad. I always remember those were terrible. Like, even like the Universal Escape ads and how people got completely confused if this was a new expansion to the park or a whole new park. So,
yeah, back then, I frankly think that the best advertising Universal had was Nickelodeon.
That's a great, because every single show was like filmed before a live studio audience at Universal Studios Florida, and like, yep. it would kind of like juddery come in and was like really kind of like drawn over and stuff. Yeah, I'll add.
Yeah, and they showed the studio, and you knew that as a kid you could go to Universal and you could go see a Nickelodeon show, and what did you want to do more than that?
Yeah. I mean, I still never forgive my parents for never taking me when Nickelodeon was still there. So, there you go. Danny, have you seen the new ads, and what are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. So I saw the one that was just released, and I know exactly what you're talking about with the princess and then ending up in the Harry Potter robes. And that's, you know, I've been here my whole life, and I've always seen that difference in Universal trying to find its identity and Disney deciding whether or not it's going to even chase after Universal or acknowledge their existence. And I like that it's tongue-in-cheek. It's not very, they're not attacking Disney, but it is establishing this is who we are and this is what we offer and this is how we're different, and we recognize your family is going to grow and change, and we're here ready for you when that happens.
Okay, and like something like, hey, Disney's familiar, Orlando's familiar, but we're here to be, you know, the next part of your family growing up and your family vacation, kind of in a way.
To expand on Danny's point on sort of the tongue-in-cheekness of the commercial, it really does seem to be that that's the direction that Universal wants to go on. If you just go ahead and compare the two primary communication Twitter accounts between Universal and Disney, WDW Today is very much all business, whereas as the Universal Orlando account seems to be much more engaging. It seems to actually engage on a level that people who talk to it want to engage on. They want funny memes and GIF fights and to feel like they're talking to a real person. They don't want to get the standard responses. Disney seems to be very contented in giving. You know, Disney seems to have pulled back, and you can tell that they're coming from sort of a customer relations standpoint. They're definitely customer relations cast members. They've got a script and they stick to it. But Universal seems to really give their Twitter account more leeway, and it seems like they went for more of a social media type. They went with someone who has a marketing background or someone who knows social media well and has the ability to interact on the level that Twitter interacts on. Disney seems to be getting very quickly left behind on that front.
Yeah, what's interesting is when I look at Disney's Twitter account, it's very much customer service responding to, you have 4 more days left, and, you know, like a picture of a 4 and like a fancy font. And then also what I really like that Disney does on their Twitter account that actually we did was the shout-outs to cast members. And they print out the tweet and they give them like a recognition and everything like that. Have you seen them do that? Yeah, we did that with
I've called them out on my own. It's one of my favorite things to do when at Disney is when somebody goes above and beyond to know that they've been recognized for that.
Yeah, and we got Skipper Erica recognized at Trader Sam's because we had a blast there in October, and we were there for like 2 hours, and we were like chanting her name by the end of the of the night.
I seem to recall highlights of that evening. A couple Twitter accounts.
Yeah, the OAs helped, but it was a good time.
Don't they always?
Yes, they do. And the zombies, and the Nautiluses, and the Mai Tais.
Is that not a lie? I feel like it's not a lie.
But yeah, I really like Disney doing that. But Universal's Twitter account more has their like they're really like the Wendy's sick burn kind of way, in a weird, you know, they're kind of going for that angle, which is very clear because Wendy started doing it and then they started doing it too. So
have you seen them become best friends on Twitter? A couple of weeks ago, they became best friends.
No, I have not seen that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
It was straight out of Step Brothers. They definitely became best friends.
What's also really weird is like the whole entire Twitter accounts of run by corporations that try to be like super cool and hip and modern, like the Arby's account tweeting about like the new Final Fantasy game coming out. It's like, I don't know about that. It just seems weird, but whatever.
It's got to grow organically. You've got to find your own niche. I'm a big fan of Alton Brown, and I was listening to his podcast the other day, and he said he didn't really get Twitter until he found his own way of doing it, his own angle. And if anybody who follows Alton Brown knows, when he responds to you on Twitter, he doesn't reply to you on Twitter. He pulls up a picture of your tweet on his computer, and then he writes back to you on a sticky note.
Usually with a little photo.
Yeah, with a little drawing.
So you've got to come about your own thing organically. Like you said, Arby's, it's kind of forced. And the problem with Arby's is they keep sponsoring. And I don't follow them, but I see their tweets because they sponsor the heck out of them. Whereas Universal, it just happens. And sometimes you stumble on a thread because one of your friends gets pulled into it. And you just sort of fall down this rabbit hole, and you're laughing, and everybody's looking at you funny at work. And you really can't explain why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else with the ads? Anything about the Twitter ads or just anything like that? Because we're going to move on, I think. Good? Okay. Yep, silence, I'll take as a confirmation, yes. Also, today, real quick at Universal, they've done some limited team member testing for Fallon today. Seems to be, like, higher-end management, upper-ranking team members. Doesn't sound like it's anyone. They haven't announced it on the Universal Orlando team member page yet, so they're getting close, it sounds like. But, yeah, that's it for Universal. Let's get in the meat and potatoes of this. We're going to have a lot of Disney news. Let's start off with the confirmed news, at least. They're expanding Coronado Springs and Caribbean Beach Resort. At Coronado, they're adding a 15-story tower, adding 500 additional rooms. The new tower will be looking Lago Dorado, the resort's lake. And Coronado Springs will be adding a bunch of new rooms. I believe it's going to be DVC. I'm trying to see if there's any other news. I'm pulling all this stuff from Orlando United, of course. Also, Caribbean Beach will be adding a new waterfront dining area, retail shopping, and new landscaping. So that's really kind of interesting because I remember on the Disney Dish with Jim Hill and Lynn Testa, they were talking about Caribbean Beach really doing a DVC expansion, shutting down maybe some of the old buildings, but it sounds like they're actually expanding. Kind of doing the Bay Lake Tower thing where you can, where there's going to be a lounge on top of the DVC where you can watch Illuminations, and then it sounds like they're expanding all their food and merch opportunities into like a little miniature boardwalk. So, Danny, what are your thoughts on this?
What I am gathering from this is being able to attract two different things. Definitely Coronado Springs, they are a group hotel first and foremost. They want conventions, they want groups of different kinds, and it's a viable option for groups that want a lower rate. But then when they get there and they're seeing the rooms and they're seeing the amenities, they're a little bit disappointed because it's a little less than what most groups and associations think a Disney convention or group hotel should be. Mm-hmm. And they did a refurb of the rooms a couple years ago, and they did plus the rooms a little bit, but it really does seem like they are going to get more. They're trying to get more group guest satisfaction. And then with Caribbean Beach, you know, there has been that rumor for DVC for so long that DVC members are wanting more resorts that offer a lower point value, and certainly taking a moderate resort and adding a DVC component, which although isn't confirmed, it really all signs seem to be pointing towards that, will allow DVC members to have another option on property that hopefully won't take that many points to stay in.
Mm-hmm. Ben, what are your thoughts?
Well, it seems to me that Coronado, as Danny said, it's for groups, it's for conventions, and when you think about having a convention at Disney, you're attracting big people, and they want that Disney experience. And you're going to be attracting not only your normal level employees, but there's going to be other people who are there as well who want better rooms, and they're going to want, you know, full suites or higher level services like concierge level. And they may not have time to leave the convention center, but they still want to say, yeah, we did Disney. So they're giving them, the higher level suites, the higher level rooms, and they're putting rooftop dining and bars on top, so you can just zip to the top of your hotel and wow your clientele. Look, we're here in the middle of Walt Disney World, showing you what we can do in these gorgeous rooms. And if you look over there, there's fireworks, and if you look over there, there's fireworks, and have some great food. And it's really it's a selling point because so many people are coming to Orlando for conventions now, and Disney needs to step up their game to match other convention hotels.
Yeah, and by spinning off your whole entire stepping up your game, like I kind of see this 15-story hotel, like I kind of see that almost as a response in a way to what Universal built with Sapphire Falls, and that they're going to build mm-hmm. with Aventura in a way. Like, hey, we're relying on these resorts. for convention traffic. And we're seeing the convention traffic really, that lower tier kind of like hotel room that they're looking for, has really evolved beyond what Coronado usually offers. So I kind of see this as a response to that in a way of saying like, hey, we need to step up our game a little bit. That's especially interesting because like a lot of their deluxe resorts aren't reaching capacity anymore. And what I've been hearing is like their summer bookings are down. So it's really interesting to see them like very specifically adding capacity in certain locations as opposed to opening a brand new resort.
Right.
Yeah.
And adding capacity, they are. I'm just looking quickly at statistics. My former jobs and lives have me thinking in numbers. But Coronado's got just about 2,000 rooms. They're adding 500 more. It's a 25% expansion.
Wow.
Wow.
Just to give you an idea of, yeah, 15 story. As somebody on Twitter said, I wish I could remember. I apologize if it was you because I cannot attribute it to you. But somebody said, they're throwing a Bay Lake Tower in Coronado Springs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 15 stories tall. It's 500 rooms with perhaps a more entry-level concierge. So maybe they're trying to move. I've heard some people thinking that perhaps they're doing away with the value, moderate, and deluxe tiering system and are just going to have varying price points. But they also might be starting to add concierge to some of their higher-end moderates. You can bump the price of your moderate up a touch, but you're still delivering some, maybe not all, but some of the concierge level amenities and hooking somebody who may not be able to stay at a deluxe concierge, but suddenly they want to. And, you know, the next time they come down, maybe they've gotten a raise, maybe they've gotten a promotion. You get them when they're, you know, get them at an entry level, much like an entry level luxury car. And then suddenly they come back and they've got a bigger family. They've been promoted. They suddenly want your middle level and they're just spending more and more money with you, building that loyalty.
Mm-hmm. I think another, what was I going to say? I completely forgot now. Wow. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. Yeah.
Well, I did want to remark on kind of the concierge level being mm-hmm. added to a moderate. It's concierge clubs really aren't that profitable for hotels. Sometimes in some properties, they're actually a loss leader. So it's interesting to think about a concierge level being added to a moderate where already moderates are fairly profitable, but they're not always to the level that a deluxe can be. And then you're adding a component that's not always very profitable in itself. So it'll be interesting to see how Disney creates that experience and see what they offer in order to make it a profitable center. Or maybe it'll just be more of a booking tool and even a guest service recovery tool. Because if you have even a family that has a poor experience, that's an easy guest service recovery tools to throw in access to that lounge.
Mm-hmm. What I was going to mention before that I forgot was like the moderate, the value moderate, and deluxe kind of designation kind of has died off since they started doing the all-star resort suites, and you started seeing the Art of Animation and those kind of places where they really have, you know, the $300 to $400 rooms, but it's in a value resort. It's just a suite. So you're kind of seeing this kind of disappear in a way. And like even at Universal, you're seeing that go with yeah. Sapphire Falls, where it's like where is that? And also like same thing with Royal Pacific. It's like, well, the rooms are smaller than Hard Rock and Portofino, but you still get the Express Pass. So you're kind of trying to find this weird middle ground, and then Cabana Bay's adding two bedroom suites for like $400 to $500 a night. So that sleeps eight people, for crying out loud. Talk about a perfect Halloween Horror Night suite for like a group of friends, but like it just seems like the whole entire very clean distinctions is kind of going away. And I think that's an interesting thing that was brought up and just kind of something to watch out for, I guess, in the next 5 to 10 years.
and frankly, I think we're going to see more suites and suites with benefits coming out, whether it's still called concierge or whether it's access to exclusive areas. The big thing in the cruise industry right now is the ship within a ship concept. Mm-hmm. Norwegian's been doing it for years. Disney to a much lesser extent. And Royal Caribbean's been doing it quite lately, where if you're a suite guest, you got access to places in the ship where if you don't want to go to the main dining room and you know, have to be in a crowd of people, because these ships are now, you know, 6,000 people strong, you don't want to deal with that. You don't have to. Mm-hmm. You can completely just stay within your subsection and decompress. And perhaps that's what these concierge lounges are going to be coming. Just places where you can go back to your resort. You don't have to stay in your room, where you don't feel like you're getting the Disney experience. You're not getting your money's worth or your Disney-ness. But you can go to a concierge lounge and really enjoy, you know, what you look at as value added, the free canapes or whatever. Mm-hmm. I know when I've had the opportunity to stay at the Polynesian, my parents stayed there rather, in a concierge room. They let us come up and sneak into the concierge lounge with them.
I
didn't want to leave. I didn't want to go to the parks.
Yeah,
I'm on a couch. I'm looking over. I can see Magic Kingdom. I don't want to go anywhere. And I've got that Disney feel. I feel like I'm getting value because there's tiny bottles of water and small cookies, and they've got me hooked.
Yeah. What's interesting though is like I've only been to the Polynesian once to stay there. Actually, this is back when they still had parrots in the lobby. That should tell you how long ago this was. We actually I have a few stories here. That one, we actually had to have someone open the front doors for us, because what happened were the parrots would climb down from the balcony, like where they used to be, and they would walk out the front door. In the middle of the night, like 2 a.m., the parrots would just be walking out the front door. So they had to shut off the front door. There was that. So that's like the only time I've been in the Polynesian, because we just can't afford it otherwise. We'd rather, you know, spend the time in the parks. Like, hey, you know what? We'd rather go to Trader Sam's. We'd rather go to Citricose and Jico and Tutto Gusto and all these places that are awesome, but like stay at a cheaper hotel.
True.
The other thing was... family friends of ours, him, his wife, and his daughter actually went to they got a really great deal for concierge at the beach club when the concierge was under renovation. And what they did was they took their presidential suite and turned it into the concierge room. So, like, they got a great deal with that, and they just did that. And they said, this is, like, the greatest thing in the world. They're like, can we do this again? That was also the same guy who actually... him, his dad, and his brother ended up one night in the Disney Dream Suite in Cinderella's Castle during a year of a hundred dreams or whatever. A year of
million
a year
dreams.
Of million dreams. Yeah,
I was on the
go.
Dream Squad. Come on.
Yeah, sorry. No, I got confused between 100 years of magic
years
and
of magic.
Yeah. They kind of blended together, you know. They kind of like overlapped, especially with 9/11, kind of making that 100 years of magic kind of go long. But anyway, that was just a really, anyway, that's my story. Anything else, Danny, or anything, Ben, concierge or Coronado Springs or Caribbean Beach or anything like that?
Well, selfishly, I'm always happy for new places to eat, you know, being local to the parks. Anytime I get a new thing that I can go visit and new food that I can experience, I'm a happy camper. And doubly selfishly for myself, I love fireworks from places where you don't normally see fireworks.
Yeah.
I like the idea of going up there and just saying, all right, let's have a couple drinks, some dessert, and watch the fireworks. Inevitably, I end up setting my camera up and taking pictures, but that's me. But, you know, there's a lot of people who just... You know, if it's a great thing to do if you have friends in town who may not want to spend the Disney money for a park pass. All right, let's go to California Grill. We'll grab some drinks. You know, you'll get in and out under $30, and you can get some fireworks at night. They pipe the music, and you've got your Disney experience. And it's a lot easier. You don't have to deal with the crowds. You don't have to deal with any of that. You can get out. You can still get your fireworks at night, but you don't have to be in the parks if you don't want to be.
Mm-hmm. And
thinking about hotel rooms, I mean, you can charge a good $50 to $75 extra a night for a fireworks view. So I'm sure they're looking for.
Yeah. And another good thing is, like, you know, Disney, for a while, like, Disney was, like, really going down that ugly, like, rabbit hole of just, like, the worst food imaginable. Like, hey, we're opening McDonald's. Hey, we're opening another T-Rex. Like, all this really bad food. And just, like, it seemed like all the good restaurants were, like, just kind of atrophying and shutting down. And they're, like, I remember, like, everything was turning into a character breakfast or a character lunch. They got rid of...
Or a buffet.
Or a buffet, yeah. I mean, one of my favorite places for breakfast at Disney, period, used to be the place in Africa. What's its name?
Tusker House.
Yeah, Tusker House. Back in the early 2000s when you could like get that awesome breakfast platter and it was just a normal restaurant, and then they turned it into a buffet and like everything went real bad. But it just seems like Disney's been excluding a few exceptions, like Planet Hollywood. It seems like Disney's been on a real good kick with restaurants, especially with Disney Springs, which I thought would be like really mixed, and I thought some of those would close down. It's been absolutely insane how good the quality is. Like, my parents went there with my sister last fall, without me, because I went to Halloween Horror Nights. But they went there. They went to Morimoto's. They went to Fonterra. And before that, the year before, I went with them to Boathouse, and they loved all three of their restaurants. And they said Fonterra was their best restaurant they've ever been to on Disney property.
Wow.
Yeah, so, Disney's really been hitting out of the park with Disney Springs and food in general lately. Mm-hmm. You know, we forget about Tiffin's. That's an in-park restaurant. They are serving whole fried fish in a theme park.
At California Adventure, you can get a whole fried fish at counter service. Like for their,
they're doing that at Skipper Canteen too.
Yeah, and
head-on shrimp in the middle of Skipper's Canteen. They're really getting adventurous, and I think something that a lot of people were concerned about, especially with Skipper Canteen, was that they were going to get all this terrible guest feedback, and people just want hamburgers and hot dogs and chicken fingers, and that's all. My friends and I all rushed out to Skipper Canteen to eat before they changed the menu to be something boring. Mm-hmm. And we just had our first major menu refresh, and it's still interesting.
Yep.
Which means guests are responding to not Casey's.
And quality. Just frankly, quality.
People will pay for quality.
And I think that's fantastic. My only complaint is like the alcohol selection they chose for Skipper Canteen and anywhere in the Magic Kingdom is really kind of poor.
Yeah, I keep hoping that it was just okay, we're going to roll this out real quick, so let's just go with the stock that we have that's easy to restock, and then we'll eventually fine-tune it, but so far that hasn't happened.
Yeah, you
think...
That's
from the department of it works, don't mess with it.
Yeah.
That's also the department of, do you know what's in a martini? Vodka. You know, the Disney standard bar menu, so...
Yeah.
Like, I could see them, like... But here's the thing. You could take Skipper Canteen's, like, alcohol menu and just, like, compare it to, like, Sanaa or Jiko and use that kind of... That wine selection, which is the best wine selection. Like, that and Citricose have, like, my favorite wine selection at Disney World. Like, I actually found my one favorite bottle of red wine from Jiko, and I ordered, like, a six-pack of it from, like, online. So I dropped, like, $120 on this, and it was beyond worth it, because it's, like, the greatest wine in the world. But, yeah. Anyway.
You're talking my language.
Yeah. It's the Stark Conde Cabernet Sauvignon. I think it was 2010. Give or take. So I'm a red wine guy. Yeah, I'm a red wine guy, so... Nice. That's the wine I really like. I don't know if it's available anymore. They may be on 2014 or another year.
Yeah.
But, man, that was really good. Also, I actually also had John Lasseter wine at Citricose. So that was cool. So that was different. Anyway, moving on. Talking about reasons why you can upgrade your Caribbean Beach for DVC and charge more money is a rumored gondola system. A gondola system that would run between Epcot, Caribbean Beach, and Hollywood Studios.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of rumors that come around, like, Guardians of the Galaxy is coming to Epcot. And I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. I'll believe it when I see it. I've read the contract. I know some stuff, but whatever. I feel pretty confident to say the gondolas are happening. So...
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I definitely. It makes too much sense for them to not do it.
And it's just cool.
Well, yeah. Well, beyond that factor, there's no. If you're in the southwest part of the property, you've got buses or you've got your own car. Mm-hmm. You don't have the monorail system that gets you around. And it just makes sense. I mean, you'll be able to get to Hollywood Studios from the Contemporary without stepping foot on a bus.
Yeah.
That'd be mm-hmm. cool.
I mean, it would take a long time, but you could do it.
I'm not saying it's not going to take a long time, but at least you'll get your steps in that day.
Yeah. But so what would happen was you'd go from the Contemporary monorail, TTC, TTC to Epcot. Then I imagine what they have to do is they have to bring back the... remember behind World Showcase, they did a tram?
Yeah, yeah.
So I imagine they bring that back because the loop is still there. So they do that. Yep. They do the gondolas from there all the way to Hollywood Studios. I assume it's a triangle, but maybe it'll be just from Epcot to Caribbean Beach to Hollywood Studios, but I'm not sure exactly. So,
I think there have been people who have sort of figured out the maps, and it looks like they're throwing a junction station in somewhere. Trying to pull it up right now, but mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, you can absolutely do that. And I mean, we've all been hoping and praying for a new monorail loop, but it comes to the point where a monorail is just too expensive.
Well, and also, one of the things that, and one of the things that people talk about the gondolas is like, oh my God, how are we going to do it? I mean, these are going to be Swiss Alps grade gondolas, like that can like probably seat like 20 people, climate controlled. It's going to be absolutely crazy, really nice. They're going to be really big, but they're also going to be probably very close to the ground because there's no reason for these things to be like any higher than like 10 to 15 feet off the ground, like a monorail.
Right.
It's not like they're going to be like 100 feet in the air. So you're going to be able to like evacuate them normally using a cherry picker. Gondolas are pretty reliable. You'll be able to take them off and bring them back on. So what I'm seeing from WDW Magic is a transition station right outside of Caribbean Beach. And what would happen would be there would be... it looks like it's transportation to... It looks like... Is All-Stars right south of Caribbean Beach?
I believe that's Pop.
Pop Century? Okay, so it would go to Pop Century to a transfer station that would then stop also... That would also be the Caribbean Beach location. And then the transfer station would take you either to Hollywood Studios or a little while longer to Epcot. That's kind of what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and with Pop, of course, also comes quick access to Art of Animation.
Yeah,
so you're linking in two of your most popular value resorts to a moderate that you're completely redoing and hooking them up to two parks that have never been on that sort of transportation loop before. Mm-hmm. It's going to be incredible, and the great thing about a gondola system is when it comes into station, you don't have to slow down. You don't have to stop for extra time if there's people who need assistance getting on. They already slow down to do that. They already decouple from the line, and they move at a slow speed so anybody can load on. There's no additional requirements there because they're made for people to clunk on them wearing ski boots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so they're very friendly to all sorts of people who need to get on, the whole age range from kids up to grandparents and everybody in between.
So
they'll be hard pressed to get me off of it.
like the beach, the Crescent Lake resorts that are deluxe resorts, you know, even Swan Dolphin, you know, you're paying a higher rate than the moderates. And they have the boat system between Hollywood Studios and Epcot. But that, to your point, you know, that the boat system can be a little bit cumbersome because of the docking and then the backing back out. And sometimes they have to, you know, wait off to the side while another boat is getting in or out. So is there going to be somewhat that guest dissatisfier of I'm paying extra and now these moderate resorts have a better transportation system? Or are they going to somehow incorporate that area into the system as well? Are they going to get their own station?
It looks like the origination station at Epcot is going to be right outside of the International Gateway. So Beach is going to have no trouble with that. Beach and Yacht can both quickly walk to there. But, you know, Boardwalk, somewhat similar. But I agree with that. They're going to have to do some heavy advertising to say, these are great, but you can still walk there. You can take the boat. You have options to really keep those deluxes at their own level.
Well, it kind of goes back to our earlier discussion also about the ambiguity and the blurring of the categories. So I'd be curious, you know, to see how that rate structure starts to look.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyways, I feel pretty confident to say that gondola system's happening. Taking a stab at it, I have to imagine this opens by the time Star Wars Land opens. Iger says it's 2019. I have a gut feeling Hollywood Studios may not make that date. I think what they're really aiming for with a Star Wars Land, real quick on side tangent, is I think they want to go for spring at Disneyland and then winter at Disney World. It just makes sense. But I can't like shake the feeling they're still going to get delayed and have a winter schedule where they'll debut the last movie at Disneyland and then they'll open 2020 at Hollywood Studios. So that's just my gut feeling on the situation.
It would definitely make sense to have the gondola system up and running well before then. But luckily, the gondola systems are relatively easy to make. They're all built off site. The only things they really need to build are the junction stations and the endpoints.
Yeah,
but it will take a lot of pressure off the bus systems and the boats at Hollywood Studios. Because Studios is going to be packed very, very soon if it opens in 2019, the Star Wars and Toy Story, if it opens in 2020, we're going to have people flocking there in droves.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they're going to need to take some of that. They have a pressure there that they're going to really need to relieve. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how good the Millennium Falcon ride is going to be. You're going to have unhappy people, and they're going to make themselves heard.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a bunch of stuff I can talk about Star Wars Land, but we won't do that. That'll take us another 20 minutes, and no need to hold everyone that much longer on talking about Star Wars Land projections and stuff. That's another discussion for another time, because there's a reason why I brought Ben and Danny on. That's to talk about this brand new show that opened called Rivers of Light. So you guys have actually seen the show. As opposed to us jerks just watching it online on YouTube and like forming our own critiques and, you know, like rah, 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 rah. So I guess how do you want to handle this? You kind of want to talk about when you've seen them and like, so let's start. Danny, when have you seen the shows and how many times have you seen it? And like where from also?
Well, now I kind of feel like a schmo because I've only seen it once.
Oh, okay. Well, jeez. Well, anyway, nice to have you. So
well, that's all the time we have.
Yeah.
So I saw it Sunday, this past Sunday, and I did reserve a Fast Pass Plus. So I watched it from the Asia section of the theater, and I got typical bloggers and anxiety, and rather than actually going at my fast time, I went ahead and went in right when the theater opened. So I sat there for a good 45 minutes, despite having the fast pass. And then the show was delayed for 15 minutes. So I was actually in the theater an hour before the show actually began. But So despite the rough start there, I have to admit I am, you know, a huge Animal Kingdom fan, and I have been just waiting and waiting and waiting to see this new age of Animal Kingdom come into existence with having it open at night. Now we have a nighttime show. So I knew going in, I was always, I would already want to like it. So I do like it. Does it have its weak points? Absolutely. Is it disappointing compared to what we thought it was going to be? Absolutely. But do I think it's worth the average guest time? And that's something I, you know, I try to think about beyond us within the fandom. You know, we of course have every right to our opinion. But there is a different perspective sometimes from the average guest. And I think the average guest is going to enjoy it. But I do think there are families with, you know, young kids, or people who maybe don't quite understand, what Epcot, excuse me, what Epcot, see? How similar the show is to Illuminations. There may not be many people who understand kind of the concept of Animal Kingdom, and I do think this show is definitely going to go either over their heads, or it's just not going to capture their attention, and it is going to be a disappointment compared to what they may hope and expect it to be. I will definitely go back, but I will not do a fast pass, and I probably won't even sit in the theater. There's enough to, for me at least, to enjoy just off to the side. The projections may look terrible if you're not facing it forward, but some of them don't look that great anyway.
Okay.
So I'd be perfectly okay, you know, grabbing a drink either at Thirsty River or Nomad and walking over to the lagoon and just standing along the side and wrapping up an evening there. I don't think it would be worth me waiting almost 45 minutes again for it. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it.
Cool. We'll get in some of your more in-depth thoughts in a second. But Ben, what are how many times have you seen it? Like, where have you seen it? What are your general kind of thoughts?
Well, they say the first step of admitting you have a problem is admitting you have a problem, and I have a problem in regards to Rivers of Light. I've seen it 6 times. I've went to 1 preview. I've had 3 fast passes. So I've always been on the Asia side, and I've seen it 2 times from Flametree. Mm-hmm. To give sort of another perspective, the standby line every time I've walked by it to see Rivers of Light has been back to Flametree and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes back and forth queuing right outside of Dino Land. And it's, you know, people want to see the show. The show is incredibly popular from a standby perspective. The lines are massive. And I really, really enjoy Rivers of Light. It's gorgeous. And yes, you do have to you have to bring a little bit of your own road with you to sort of fill in the blanks. It's not always straightforward. There is you got to interpret what's going on. But it's spectacular looking. I can definitely speak to Danny's point. If you're not looking at the projections head on, you're going to lose something. They look terrible from Flametree. But I just had a picture in my head from Flametree after seeing it the first time, and I had to take it and get it out of my system. So that was 2 nights back there. But it's a spectacular show. It really does capture the essence of Animal Kingdom. It's not your traditional Disney nighttime spectacular. There are no fireworks. There is fire, but there are no fireworks. And I really enjoy it despite the fact that I absolutely love a good fireworks show. But you know, I'll get into particulars as we go through the conversation, because I definitely have some thoughts on particulars. But just sort of the way I put it is, there are times during this show when somebody just got back from Vegas and they worked at Imagineering and they said, I want to do the Bellagio and I want to do World of Color. And they said, okay. They said, and I want to put it on floating barges. And they said, okay. And I want to make them dance at the same time. It's just, it's really a technological marvel. And you don't really feel like they're just chucking technology at you. You really feel like it's a great show. And Danny, I was at that Sunday show as well. It was a huge bummer because the pre-show is spectacular.
Yeah, I'm so bummed we missed
It's a mega, mega good pre-show. And they sort of spoiled their own lead with having to wheel the Big Lotus out from stage center rather than their big reveal. Because during that big reveal, I keep my ears open when I'm watching the show, and every time that Lotus comes out from behind the water curtains, everybody around me goes, "Where did that come from?" And people are freaking out because it's completely hidden, and it comes out of nowhere, and you're going, "That wasn't there before." And then it opens up, and the Tower of Fire, it's spectacular. When it's on, it is really good, and I think it's only going to get better. I don't think we're getting the full show yet.
Yeah.
I think we're missing some pieces, and I think they just wanted to get a show going that was reliable, because when Pandora opens, they're going to need something to take pressure off of Pandora, because they're going to have a huge influx of people on that side of the park, and the ability to pump 15,000 people a night through Rivers of Light is really going to relieve some of that pressure.
It seems like mid-April is going to be a better time to see the show, because that's when it comes out of no longer being four nights a week. It'll actually be seven nights a week. Of course, that's Easter time frame and spring break, so naturally it's going to be busier, and they need to have it all seven nights of the week. But I would hope that this next month gives them enough time to tweak it, and hopefully we'll get the full show by that time.
Yeah, I've heard rumors that the full show includes people walking down the aisles, which is something that's sorely needed. Being a photographer, I like to notice details, and I bring really big lenses to shows so I can capture performers. And I was going through pictures from Sunday night's performance actually earlier today. And the details in these costumes are incredible. You're doing a disservice to not try and look at them, and Disney's doing a disservice to not really showing them off. If you get a chance when the show's over, if you run to either side of the ends of the stadium, you can sometimes see the teacher and their apprentice debark the boat, and they'll walk right by you, and you can see just the level of detail in their costumes is incredible. The fabrics and the colors and the textures, they're really cool. Really cool.
Yeah, with the show being, I don't know if it was because of the delay or lack of pre-show or what, but we could see them very clearly getting on the boat right at just before showtime. And even just from far away, it did. They appeared to be gorgeous.
They're truly, truly stunning. It's just the level of detail and how everything looks, and the soundtrack. I wrote in my initial review of this that it wasn't an earworm, and that was the worst move ever, because I've had the soundtrack stuck in my head for 3 days now. I find myself humming it at my desk at work, and my coworkers look over at me and go, "Rivers?" And I say, "Yep, it's still there." it's a remarkable show. The projection technology doesn't always work, but when it does work, especially on some of the smaller barges, you don't realize the 3D effects that they can get with projecting light on a mist of water are really, really cool.
Amen.
I mean, and unfortunately, this is all stuff that doesn't translate to a YouTube video. The only thing I can say is if you're going to watch it on YouTube, see if you can find a 60 frame per second show, because 30 frames is not going to give you the color or the smoothness of the show. And the smoothness is important, because the show really does flow from one scene to the next scene once I figured out how to interpret everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there was definitely some fill in the blanks after the first show.
when you think about Illuminations, your first time, or maybe your first two or three times seeing it, it may not have hit home as to what that story and what each act actually represents. So I do feel that this show will get better, and in terms of each time you see it, there'll be different nuances and points that you didn't grasp the first time you see it.
Yeah, it really does hold up really well. It's a show that is best enjoyed wide and tight. You can either sit there the whole show and then just enjoy the spectacle of everything, watching all of the floats move around one another in their dance, and the when they go four and five wide across the lake for their World of Color, their Bellagio water dance. But it's also really, really enjoyable to spend the entire time watching the teachers or the apprentices, even when you're not supposed to be watching them. During some of the scenes, if you look at what you're not supposed to look at, you'll find that there's still level of detail there. These performers are still reacting to what's going on a projection or in the water. They're still reacting. They're not just shutting down because nobody's looking at them, because there might be somebody looking at them. And it's that level of detail that I keep coming back and I keep looking at more and more and really enjoying it.
That's an excellent point. This is really the first nighttime show where, yes, in Fantasmic, you have all of these live performers, but when it's not their time to shine, when it's not their part of the story, then they are pretty much hidden. Whereas here you have these live performers that, even if the focus isn't on them, they are still completely visible. And so that is one great thing that Disney does anytime they have live entertainment, is to really train those performers to, you're still here, you're still part of this story, you're still on stage, so play to it. And those subtleties that you pay attention to that really do make shows like these that much more enjoyable.
I agree 100% there. I have really nothing more to add on that. At least on that, you covered it really well. I was thinking of other things to add. I just have nothing. It's IP free. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's no IP in this show. This is all original content, which is really refreshing in a time of, oh, we have 30 square feet of open space, Frozen. or Star Wars it, if, as you will. I won't play favorites here because they're Star Warsing everything these days. It's really refreshing to come in and to have an original story, not just something that, you know, you could have seen at home. And yes, it's cool to see it brought to light, but I don't want to see those characters outside of my television, or the stories that's being told on my television. With Rivers, you get that spectacular news story.
Yeah, it's refreshing, just like you said.
Cool. I guess one of the questions I have is, I've watched a few of the YouTube videos, and clearly I've heard a lot of the behind-the-scenes talk about how there's technical issues, there's, you know, actual content issues and stuff like that. So I'm incredibly interesting to hear, like, actual people's opinions of who've seen the show. And people who I trust, too, not the usual kind of, like, hey, Stitch's Great Escape is the best new attraction this year, you know, that kind of thing. I guess the real question is, like, how are the projections, like, not just, like, the main water, like, screen projections, but also the projections on the lotus flowers? Because I know those each have an individual water screen. And also the boats themselves. Like, how does that play together?
The ones on the lotuses are where you start noticing the 3D effects, and they're really, really, really good.
Okay.
Really good.
Yeah.
They've really perfected the mist technology.
Okay.
Yeah, and on the boats, I was impressed as well. I think that the challenge seems to be with the larger water screen. And there was, we were pretty close to the center of the Asia section, but we were slightly to the right. And there were a couple of times where I almost felt like I needed to go back to the eye doctor to make sure that I didn't have some sort of visual problem. Because the projections just, I almost felt like I was going cross-eyed. They got a little blurry, or it's done in such a way to, if no matter where you are in the amphitheater, you can still see the main projections. And part of that is one image is being projected multiple times across the vast expanse of the stage. And there were a couple of moments where I felt like I was seeing double because of that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. The what they project with lasers, I think translates better than the projections with an actual projector. The lasers tend to be a little bit crisper. They're also some of the few things you can actually see when you're behind the projectors. As far as the boats go, the boats are sharp. They're being projected on cloth, so those are very, very sharp. It's what you've known and loved from projectors that we've been using for years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Are there any, like, I guess, complaints about the show, or, like, well, not complaints. Are there any opportunities for improvement? in my quality assurance role mentally, are there any ways to improve the show and ways that you could see, like, to really kind of build up the things that you like?
I think I was expecting maybe a little bit more interaction between the shaman, because one represents water and the other one represents light. And I perhaps that was just my own expectation and my own failing in that, but I kept waiting for a moment where it really felt like they came together, or I don't know why that was such a hang up of mine, but I kept waiting for it and waiting for it, and I didn't really see it. And so that almost was a distraction for me. Mm-hmm. And there is a, you know, almost like every show, whether it's Disney or otherwise, you build up kind of to a crescendo at the beginning, and then you fall down. Maybe there's a little bit of a darkness, and then, you know, you have this rejoicing and lift at the end. But I didn't feel a complete arc throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, people I trust have been saying things along the lines, those who did not enjoy the show, very similar things. There's really no, some people are saying there's really no mind-blowing effect in it. There's no big moment that really sort of blows you away. It's a show that keeps coming and keeps coming, and it builds and builds, but there's really no, it doesn't, I think, at any time punch you out of your seat.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, you know, in Illuminations, the first time the Inferno Barge goes off, and it's the big volume of fire. Mm-hmm. That's sort of one of those, it rocks you back. Wow, that's a moment. There's not one of those, which people have sort of come to expect. Some other people have been saying, you know, it doesn't really, they're having trouble, you know, just getting into it. It doesn't pull them in from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the animal floats?
More, please.
I want tiny ones that I can put on my desk and light up.
Yeah, because those seem
why this is not a thing, I do not know. Why can I not spend obscene amounts of money on tiny little True. Floats that I can push around my desk at work?
That's a great question. What I saw from the show was, like, they kind of, like, show up and disappear. Like, it seems like they kind of lose their focus real quick, and they could have done something interesting with them. Or is that just me?
Danny, go ahead.
They do have a substantial, I feel, part in the beginning. Mm-hmm. They, from what I understand, the ending and their involvement in the ending isn't exactly how they originally wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, they do come back out and they do play a fairly significant part in the end, but as someone, you know, all of us, we've been watching this thing from the beginning, you know, the concept and everything. I think we were all expecting a little bit for them to play a bigger part.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I may be bringing my own interpretation to this, but, you know, for me, the idea is that these animals are their spirits or their totems. And when they start to do their disappearing act, they one by one go through that big curtain screen at the end of water. And as they break through the screen and they shut off their lights and stuff, they actually appear and they sort of fly up and away. So I think it's sort of, yeah, they do disappear, but once the floats have disappeared, the idea is that that spirit is still in the show flying around. And it does, and the tigers and the elephants and the owls, definitely. I'm not sure I saw much of the turtle. They definitely do keep appearing. The imagery does appear early and often once they pass through the curtain in the show on projectors of various types.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of hard for turtles to fly away. So
Well, they did do a lot of sea turtle
imagery. Oh, it's true.
So, but it is kind of, you know, I mean, you see like kind of this regular gopher turtle type and then sea turtles too. Anyone who pays attention to zoology even remotely, I was kind of that irked me, and I felt like I was paying way too much attention to subtleties like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they are, I guess, representative.
Okay,
I really like one of the ways that they introduce the owl. I'm not going to say too much, but just watch if you watch the blue barge. During one of your viewings, keep your eye on the teacher, because one of the things they do with the owl and the projector is just really clever. And I didn't notice it the first couple times I watched it. Someone had to point it out to me, and I really enjoyed it. It was a nice little projector trick that they were able to do with a live performer and a projector shadow play and the greater projector system against the backwater falls.
Be right back. I'm booking my Fast Plus.
Cool. I guess there are any other comments or things about Rivers of Light that we want to bring up?
I would just close with, at least on this topic, just it is worthy of everyone's time, and it's definitely something you should see at least once. But definitely, if you can, do see it more than once. You know, after now hearing Ben talk about it, I absolutely want to see it again and realize there's a lot that I missed in the first viewing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that I missed a lot during the first viewing. I really enjoy the rewatchability of it.
Okay.
Nothing more than that.
Cool. That sounds great. I'm trying to think if there's
it's
any
not
other
flawless,
comments. Okay.
But it's darn good.
Where would you guys rank it in terms of nighttime shows at Walt Disney World?
The one question I probably should have thought of beforehand.
Have you guys, and also, have you guys seen World of Color at Disneyland?
I have not,
yes.
No.
Okay.
I have seen World of Color more than I've seen Fantasmic here.
Well, that's a good thing, because Fantasmic here is not very good.
Right. So there were definitely a lot of moments where I was like, yeah, I can totally see techniques that they brought over from that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of wow moments in World of Color, and there aren't any fireworks in World of Color. So mm-hmm. It is entirely possible to create wow moments with, you know, in layman's terms, is a fountain show.
Yeah.
So in terms of nighttime shows within Walt Disney World, I don't dig Fantasmic, so that's going to be my least favorite. Wishes has always had a soft spot in my heart just because of when I was a cast member and when that show came out and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Fantasmic, Wishes, Rivers of Light, Illuminations.
Okay.
I fall into the same boat with Wishes. Wishes has a very special place in my life as well. So that sort of automatically shoots it to the top. Illuminations gets itself a magic bump, if only because of because of Peace on Earth tag and the fantastic other tags that can be added to it. But Rivers is a very close third. Fantasmic, I could, you know, not see again and be perfectly contented. But I imagine over in the upcoming months, I'm going to find myself seeing Rivers of Light more often than I go to Epcot to watch Illuminations.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, so I guess that's, I think we all we have for tonight. Danny, where can we find you online at?
I am most active on Twitter at This Florida Life and Instagram as well at This Florida Life. And I also do some live park tweeting from the Touring Plans handle as well.
Cool. Ben, where can we find you at?
I am also most active on Twitter at BDH _photos. But you can also find me on Instagram at Benjamin Hendel Photography and writing articles for the Disney Photography blog. Also co-running the Disney Photography blog Instagram account with Corey Disbrow.
Cool. For the Parkscope guys, you can follow us at Parkscope. I'm at Parkscope Joe on Twitter with my new Derek Bergen fine art that has been long overdue. Not theme park related, but I'm okay with that. So guys, please follow us on and subscribe to us on iTunes or Overcast or Stitcher or whatever your primary listening opportunity is. Leave us a good review on iTunes. That's how people can find new shows. So on behalf of all the Parkscope guys, thank you, Danny. Thank you, Ben, for joining us tonight. And we'll see everyone next episode. Also, a heads up. If you haven't checked it out yet, make sure to check out Alan's new podcast series that we do every other week with him called the Immersive Irony Theme Park Podcast. This past one, he interviewed Mark from Ride Entertainment. They are a company that they're actually the OEM for the Sky Coaster. So they interviewed him, and they also talked about a bunch of crazy Stan Checkett stories. He's the old guy who used to run SNS Power, if you know what that is. They're the guys who did, like, the Power Tower and stuff, so check that out. So again, thank you very much, and we'll see you guys soon. Kungaloosh, love everybody, hate everything.